So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
And this week, we are going to talk about all the news that came out from MWC 2022, which happened this week in Barcelona.
Mobile World Congress, right? What is
Mobile
MWC?
World Congress. I don't know. I mean, yes, I that was my mistake. I assume that people here know what MWC stands for. But yes, Mobile World Congress. Did they conquer some mobiles? I don't know. Anyway, we will go over some of the news. Suffice to say, it was not so mobile this year. Not so mobile, my friends. But there's also some other news that we're going to dive into. I'm sure plenty of people have seen that Apple launched some invites for an upcoming Apple event. So we'll talk a little bit about that. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe on your podcast catcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Send us your email thoughts to podcast@engadget.com. And we also do a live stream of the recording of this podcast on Thursday mornings at about 10 a.m. Eastern on the Engadget YouTube channel. We can chat with you directly there, answer your questions from the chat. So it's a fun time. Come join us. Before we move on, though, a quick celebratory note. Engadget is turning 18 this week. Hooray!
Woo! As of today,
it's kind
actually.
Of legal. As of today? Oh my goodness. In Singapore, that means Engadget can already drink. But I guess not in America.
Not in America. It means you're an adult. You can go to war. You cannot have alcohol. It's very weird.
Yeah,
it's, but also,
can you get married?
I mean, sure. Yeah, at 16 with parental approval. Yeah, you could do a lot of things, but apparently can't drink in America. Engadget has grown up. That's something. It's a monumental day.
Yes. So we just quickly thank you all for just being here with us for this and being here with us for so long. But moving on now to MWC, Mobile World Congress 2022. And joining us to break some of this down is UK Bureau Chief Matt Smith. Hey, Matt, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing good. How are you both doing?
Peachy.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to us all.
To us all.
Oh my goodness. So MWC this year, I don't know how you two felt about it, but I felt a little bit strange covering it. What with a war going on, somewhere on Monday, I think this week, the organizers of MWC announced that they would be banning Russian companies from joining or participating in the show. Matt, do you feel like this was like a monumental thing or was something that MWC just kind of had to do?
Yeah, I feel like it seemed a bit more like a thing it had to do for image and standing. And also, remember, this is a smaller MWC than previous years. Mm-hmm. They're still battling pandemics and attendance, and a lot of larger companies have A, figured out they can do this on their own, a lot of them, and B, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy when not enough companies attend and not enough media or analysts attend, therefore not enough companies attend.
Right.
So it's on that spiral at the moment. So I think anything they can do like this to kind of follow the tack of the wider Western world and kind of agree that maybe they should sanction Russian companies in this way, it makes sense, I think, just on that kind of lightweight grounds. I mean, it's not, I wonder where they draw the line with these. Like, we've seen a lot of things, and we might get into it later, but there's negotiations on like Russia's kind of approach to space, and there's been negotiations with a UK company that's part owned by Russia. And, where do you draw that dotted line? Could that kind of company attend MWC? Is that allowed? What's that percentage?
Right.
And it gets a bit mired if you get a little bit too deep into it.
Yes.
But yeah, it's not MWC though, isn't it? It was a lot more like LWC.
LWC, Laptop World Congress? Is that what you meant by L?
Yeah.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
I think that I wasn't looking forward to anything from like a Russia specific company anyway, so that's not a huge deal to me.
This is true.
Yeah. What I usually look forward to at MWC is, tapas and jamon.
Café con leche. Jamon.
Yeah. Tortados. I love, anyway. But I
we
do
just
enjoy
miss being
seeing,
there, you know?
We yeah. Do. We miss Barcelona. We will be there again one day, I'm sure. But no, the companies that I look forward to among the big names are like Samsung, Sony, Huawei. I mean, usually this is the one show that Huawei gets to like have a big splashy thing and have people pay attention because it's not a US-centric show, which is nice for them. But yeah, no, Huawei, I think, is one of the bigger shows at MWC this year, right? Like bigger companies there. Matt, you saw some of their stuff in person?
Yeah, so Huawei did like a remote briefing. They offered up the MateBook E, which is, we'll get onto that, but that's not the kind of splashiest of the devices, or at least not exactly the most interesting of the ones they revealed, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Huawei's MWC had no phones. So they kind of announced the devices that were coming to China, and without the Google and the whole, you know, no Google stuff on Android, on Huawei devices, they're kind of stuck at the moment. So yeah, it was a lot more laptops and hybrids and anything that was kind of more portable, like this e-ink tablet that we'll get to. It runs their proprietary Harmony OS, which is an Android fork, etc., etc. You know, the too long didn't read of it all is it won't have all the apps that you need on a mobile device.
Okay. I mean, I read your article about this, and at first I was like the headline had me thinking this is like a dual screen device where one screen's an e-ink and one screen's like a real Android. But I understand what you're saying. Like, it's basically an e-ink screen with sort of like tablet OS under it rather than an e-reader OS under it. And some of the stuff that Huawei has done here looks to be like adding software that allows you to split screen so you can take notes while you're reading an article.
Yeah, like voice notes. Yeah. And you can annotate those voice notes. Like a surprisingly sensitive stylus interface. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not, I wrote this in the article. It's not exactly Galaxy Note, Galaxy S22 Ultra levels of responsivity, but 26 ms on an e-ink display is very impressive. And Huawei, you know, their technical skill is really impressive. It's just, you know, the politics and the drama of it all just kind of trip them up from achieving.
Matt, have you ever used the Remarkable tablet like that? The writing tablet?
That's the one I was trying to find the backlink for, and I just couldn't find it anywhere. I think Velasco might have deleted the story or something.
No, we the story is there.
Yeah.
But I have for the longest time just been like eyeing the Remarkable 2.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, it's a handwriting e-ink display tablet, but it's also like $400 and it requires a monthly fee to keep like the cloud service going. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. But I think this field is really interesting because I miss handwriting, you know.
There's also this mention of like a texturized display, a PMMA, I believe, display, Matt. Did this feel like any different during your time with it?
Well, unfortunately, the only one I got offered to touch and I didn't even touch was the MateBook E. So I haven't seen this in person or managed to like lovingly stroke the papery surface. But yeah, I'm sure it's quite similar to those other paper. I know the TCL tablet had one, the colored e-ink one had a kind of more papery surface. And there have been a few phones that have come with it here and there. But yeah, like the specs and like the tricks are all quite impressive. And yeah, this fits this weird, like the Remarkable, it fits this weird space where it's like study tool, but also e-reader, but it's also way bigger than any Kindle you've ever seen. And yeah, it just, could you imagine having one of these like in uni or like when studying for exams and stuff?
I'm so jealous of kids.
Totally perfect.
I'm so jealous of all like college kids and high school kids now because it's like,
period.
I had to, I built a desktop before my freshman year of college, and I lugged it there, and I lugged a 20-inch CRT there. And now you guys have everything now. It's at the touch of your finger.
I was like horrified until I realized you probably went to college a little bit earlier than I did.
A little bit.
Just a tad. Just so I was like, okay.
2001. I had laptops that were... like 2001 before laptops got really cool. I think like the MacBook Pro, the titanium MacBook Pro had just come out. So like that was the coolest laptop you could get, or a Sony Vaio. But anyway, this is cool. I dig it.
The MatePad paper is supposed to come out for around 499 euros, I believe, in Europe. I don't remember exactly when, but, you know, it's not cheap. It's not like a dirt cheap thing.
Which is what you'd expect, I think, given the specifications of the thing and the size. You know, e-ink isn't cheap when it gets to bigger proportions like that. Like that was the most interesting Huawei device for me. Alongside that came more laptops and more traditional laptops and PCs. So they've updated their MateBook X Pro. This is their, you know, their slim MacBook equivalent, MacBook Air
MacBook
equivalent
copy.
Device.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely true. Although, having said that, it often comes with a lot more ports.
More ports, thinner bezels. I do like the bezels on this guy.
Oh, yeah. So pretty.
That's the thing. So, yeah, like despite having the same chassis as like the last couple of years' models, it's got a bigger screen. It has a more sensible camera at the top of the bezel, as far as I can remember, which means it's not doing that peekaboo, creepy keyboard camera, which was cool until you used it and you realized you looked like a monster.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look,
You've been a fan of these MateBook Pros, haven't you?
Exactly. I like the MateBook X series. They have MateBook E's, which are like detachable Windows tablet things, and MateBook like the X series is the much more high end, much more Apple like laptop. And this was before I had a lot of experience with Apple laptops, so my first impression of the original MateBook X was just. I was just like, oh, okay,
what a nice design. I wonder what inspired this. Amazing.
Why does it look so familiar?
So restrained.
Feels so good. Yeah.
So streamlined.
but one more port. But I will say it's been a while since I've seen one in person, and there have been a lot of laptop makers since then that have adopted similar thin and light designs. So I don't think Huawei is super unique here, right?
No. Yeah, that's the thing. So there isn't that much unique stuff here, really. They've managed to cram 6 speakers inside it just because they could. There's more airways and stuff. And they teased the idea that this... And they couldn't really quite explain it in a way that I could kind of synthesize into this story. But there's like a CPU boost built in. And the idea is it can reach 30 watts TDP. And they couldn't quite really... It wasn't as if the charger was different, although the charger is tiny and looks like a phone charger. There's a lot of things that are just kind of minor refinements and stuff like that, just all in a row. And, you know, it's all good news. It's just, I just wonder if that's enough to convince people, if they haven't already used a Huawei laptop, that this is the machine for them.
That's
I still think they have, like, you know, an issue of image that they really need to deal with.
I mean, yeah, in the US, you can't get any Huawei product, so oh well. But that boost, that power boost, is not just unique to them. Like, I believe, like, any laptop running the new Intel chips, like, they are playing a lot more around power curves now. So, yeah, even like 15-watt chips can, like, push a little harder if they need to.
Oh, wow.
That's good. I mean, on the power thing, that might be the kind of sleeper... hit feature here is all the power management. So the charger can do 90 watt supercharge, so you could get 3 hours of charge for just a 15 minute plug-in, which sounds amazing. And the charger, it just fits in your hand. It's like, you like those Android chargers you get, they're just a chunk of white with the prongs at the end, just one of those but for your laptop. Like, incredibly slim, and yeah, full of all that power. And then the other side of that is those USB-C ports can also fast charge compatible devices like smartphones and stuff, so you'd get up to 50 watts of charge through, you know, the side of your laptop. And I think that's great. I'd love to have that on my Mac and,
you know,
or like any other machine that had USB-C.
You know why that's especially nice? It's because all these phone companies aren't giving power bricks in their boxes anymore. So if you have a laptop that would do fast charging out of its ports, you could charge. I mean, no one really wants to devote a USB like port on their laptop to charging their phones. But if you have to, there is a fast charge option there. That's nice.
That's the thing. I wish we could get some of these. Like, I want a Hybrid Ink tablet, but we've got so many other devices, guys. Like,
let me quickly. So I will say it's not out of the question for us to kind of check out the MatePad paper. I think it's an interesting enough product that we might want to like see it. We might not tell you to buy it, but we might want to play with it ourselves. The other thing is Huawei, not to repeat what you might be saying coming up, Matt, but Huawei also announced a whole ton of other things, apparently. A Mate Station all-in-one PC, a PixLab, like laser printer, some like new earbuds, a new speaker, I believe, and all kinds
speaker.
Of stuff.
A new bunch of kind of like low-end laptop stuff that are still MateBooks, but just less sexy. I mean, the MateBook E is interesting, but it's like the MateBook E's we've seen before, and that, you know, this whole hybrid kind of concept, hybrid PC. But again, the hardware just sounds impressive. It's slim, slender, looks cool. And this particular one will be compatible with two different types of keyboard, which is kind of unusual. So not only do we have the kind of folio-style flat-packy one that you get with most hybrids, but they're also going to be announcing this Glide keyboard, which isn't in any of the press releases, but it was in my briefing. And the idea is you'd be able to position it on your hand, I don't know, like a pizza or something? I have no idea. and you'd be able to like just do this, like hold it on one hand and type with one hand, and the Glide keyboard itself, while being lightweight, has an extra USB port in it. So I like this idea of having like diverging keyboards with different functions of it. But yeah, like it's a bit of a mystery as to what packaging, how they will wrap either or of those keyboards. With the device, I know that it will go on sale with the slim folio typical keyboard. But yeah, I want to hear more about these more exotic keyboard layouts.
Well, Huawei wasn't able to launch phones, or at least it didn't launch phones this show, but there are other companies that did. I think one of the earliest companies to have their news announced at MWC was Oppo, wasn't it, Matt? I remember like you were...
Yeah, so Oppo was the one I actually... Yeah, the one I actually got to see. So yeah, Oppo kind of revealed their device a little bit before the show even kicked off, a few days before, in fact, and they revealed the Find X5 family. And I focused on the Find X5 Pro, which is, you know, the top-end flagship device. And yeah, it's another, if you've seen Oppo's Find X3 last year, they skipped four because Chinese company, bad luck. Sherlyn could do a deep dive later on that.
I could.
But yeah, it's a similar looking device. And it looks cool. Like it's this glossy, I should have brought it with me. I've just been so ill prepared. It's a glossy device with a kind of, it's just got a very unusual curvature to the camera module at the back. And so they've kind of made the bottom edge of the camera unit diagonal, so it kind of fits in your hand a little bit better, and it just looks a little bit different. Like, all phones now look like Samsungs, look like OnePluses, look like iPhones. Apart from the Pixel, that's kind of an outlier, but they, yeah. You know, they all have this squarish camera unit, left aligned, top right, you know, top left corner, and so just to have something that looks a little bit different with this kind of shiny, reflective ceramic finish. Yeah, it's a very good looking phone, which is nice. And then specifications are kind of much of a muchness for a flagship. You've got the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1. You've got a WQHD Plus screen, but that can go to 1,300 nits of brightness, which is kind of bonkers. That could just, I could use that as a light.
Too much for a phone. You don't need
that. Yeah, almost. Yeah. Could give me a 10.
All the time or in like specific, like only in outdoor environments?
I'm sure when you go...
Right.
I imagine it's for HDR. I'm sure it's for like localized brightening. Normally that's what the case is when it kind of goes to the max. But I doubt, like, unless you were using one of the, you know, you can get those apps for your phones that can make them act like a lighting rig. You could probably do that. But yeah, it's a nice, big, huge flagship phone. The cameras, for all the specifications, 250 megapixel sensors, 5-axis optical image stabilization on one of them, a telephoto lens, like lots of like glamorous specifications, but I wasn't all that impressed. They gave me one to try out, so I've been playing with it and filming and taking photos. And despite a new collaboration with Hasselblad, I was a bit underwhelmed, to be honest. And I do wonder what the issue is here when you have such incredible specifications on a phone. How is the company not delivering a kind of similar experience to, say, Samsung, with sometimes even better specifications hardware-wise?
It's strange to me. A lot of these phones, they on paper sound so great, and then when you're actually using them, something just holds them back. My suspicion is something on the software side, but I don't know enough to say for sure.
I also wonder if it's the case of having like almost early sample software before these devices are hitting the stores and normal people. I mean, I definitely should circle back to it because it's another impressive phone. Oppo's been doing good phones for the last couple of years. But the curse for Engadget is it's another device that doesn't usually break cover in the US, and this one doesn't sound any different.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
I mean, for you guys, I know Sherlyn now dabbles in both Android and iPhones, but do you think this is a good looking phone? I've fought with other people about
attractive
phone?
The back is it's weird. This is a weird looking phone. Like that camera bank is too. It looks like somebody like took a bite out of that phone. It looks broken. It looks broken in the back, like bent. So I don't know.
Yeah, it does look a little like...
I like it.
It's sort of trying to merge into the back of the phone, but it doesn't do that great a job. It's I don't even know how to explain it right now. It's like a scar. I don't know.
Like a scar. Like you took a hammer to the phone, and it's just like a squished part of the phone. Yeah.
It's so weird to see my hands-on video of me with just shorter hair and less beard, or more beard. I can't quite tell.
You know, I'm sure you'll have more time to spend with this phone to see if it's something that really rivals a Samsung or...
Yeah, if there's any questions, anyone watching the feed, any questions they'd like me to answer, let me know and I'll try and research it and test it out for you. But yeah, importantly, it was a phone at MWC. And I kind of put this in my write-up, like it was kind of Oppo's opportunity to kind of blow up the show early and just be one of the only phones to arrive, which is kind of cool for Oppo. And they could do with all the headlines they could get.
Yeah,
but not many. I mean, we can grow on to the other one.
Yes.
So we've already talked about Huawei, and once upon a time, Huawei had a subsidiary called Honor, which also made smartphones, often a little bit lower priced and a little bit lower spec, but still quite close to Huawei's own flagships. Now, Honor has kind of been spun out as a company in its own right. And so Honor is now able to kind of dabble with Google and Android and have all the goodies we'd really like to see in a Huawei phone, but won't see. So it's kind of a convenient middle ground for people interested in Huawei phones, because Honor often has the same technology, just with all the Google goodness you want.
It does. So I'm like super up to speed on all of this stuff. Not that I've been paying too much attention otherwise, is that I have a wrap up video coming, and I had to do a bunch of research as to like what was announced. So
yeah,
I'm up to speed. The Magic 4 and 4 Pro are positioned like Dan Cooper, who's played with them, wrote in his article. They're positioned as Galaxy S22 rivals. The specs are fairly high end.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
We're not sure either. Honor's history is more of like a more affordable, budget-friendly range. And
A51, yeah. Galaxy A51 level.
But maybe. I will say, when you mentioned, Matt, that you like the departure from camera modules on the back being like rectangles or squares to the top left of the rear, right? This one has definitely like a different look, right? The Magic 4 series.
Doesn't that camera unit look a bit like, you know, Doctor Strange's Eye of Agamotto?
It's a bit, it reminds me of the Lumia phones, actually, like back in the day. Like very like that Nokia kind of rounded back and everything. Hey, I mean, we have bad cameras right now. I think we are in a rough spot for camera aesthetics and the way it looks in phones. So I'm not going to complain about this. Everything looks bad, you know?
But the hardware itself too, right? Like there's a pair of 50 megapixel sensors here, I believe.
That's cool.
I'm sorry. Nope. That might be the Oppo.
No, you're X5. Right. They have a similar thing.
They all are
right.
Similarly spec'd. Okay.
Yeah.
And so triple camera system from what I can tell, with a TDOF, like a sensor, for I guess portraiture and stuff like that. But for some reason, it just looks OP. Like the camera module just looks like it's much more impressive than the hardware really is. It's
Not even actuality.
Right.
Yeah. So don't be too taken by that. But then the Honor Magic series in the past, right? The Magic 3 last year was Honor's kind of like one of its first phones after leaving Huawei.
Stepping out of the shadow. Yeah. It was their breakthrough phone. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And they were like, okay, we're global rollout. It's happening. We're going to break through, you know, come outside of China. And it never left China. It just never made it outside of China. So while Honor does say the Magic 4 also has like, you know, it's slated for a global rollout, we can't be too sure. Like, yes, they've had some time since the Magic 3, since leaving Huawei in 2020, to be like, okay, we figure out global supply now, but we can't be too sure, right? The company hasn't given us any reason to be confident about this. So, these were two more phones that were unveiled at MWC. There was another one, the Poco, but Matt, I don't know if you were done talking about the Honors.
So before anyone gets the wrong end of the stick, and Shirley mentioned this, the reason I don't know anything about it is because I didn't report on the phone. That's
I didn't say you didn't know anything.
Shirley kind of buried me there.
Whoa, I didn't mean to say that.
Let me help you out over here. You're drowning, like, you know.
I meant more like the reason I even know anything about those other things Huawei announced, like the laser printer for some reason, was that like I spent all of last night at midnight just scrolling through MWC press releases just to make sure we didn't like forget anything.
Which no one wants to do. But yeah,
Poco
was the other phone for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Poco, again, kind of, it kind of nestles in a similar quagmire of Honor and Oppo and Huawei and even a little bit of OnePlus in these companies that often, you know, Xiaomi, totally. You know, again, incredible spec sheets and often just incredible value for money devices. Again, but a bit of a box of mystery sometimes. You can never quite tell. You have to kind of scrutinize each phone as it lands to see whether it's worth recommending, worth testing. But again, this one on paper sounded incredible. Do you remember the spec sheet, Sherlyn, given that you're so well studied on everything?
I sure do. This is a, well, I don't know all of the specs, but this one is a 108 megapixel camera on board. It's also, what, like Poco's phones, by the way. So Xiaomi, Poco is a former sub-brand of Xiaomi, and Poco broke away from Xiaomi about, I want to say, last year. I saw a tweet and everything. And since stepping out of the shadows or of that partnership, Poco's went from, like, again, another budget-friendly brand to a more, like, we want to be high-end. We're, like, pro models. So the Pro 5G has a 108 megapixel camera, which, by the way, rivals the likes of the S22 Ultra. The S22 Ultra has a 108 megapixel camera. The rest of the S22 series, I believe, doesn't. And I mean, okay, cool, good for you, Poco. But hardware
trying to be a flagship phone with that design. Like, I don't.
I was going to say.
Interesting.
Ugly. It's very ugly.
I also was going to comment.
Yeah.
Looks like we all have. For people just listening. Yeah. So for people just listening, I'm sure we'll all have our own takes on this. But for people just listening without seeing the phone on screen, it looks, because you only see the back, it looks almost like a Walkman or a kind of audio player.
It looks like.
Or it looks like a folio case on a smartphone.
Yes, so I...
Where just a little bit pops through.
I think it looks like a credit card slapped onto the back of a phone. That's what I think it looks like.
Or when you, like, you would play around with, like, spotlight effects in photo editing. It's like, I can make a light. I can make it look like the sun is over here shining down on something. And it looks fake. Yeah. It looks bad.
So we'll describe it for the audio listener here, okay? This is the back of the phone. This is a phone that's, like, the rounded rectangular silhouette. And it looks mostly flat on all sides, except for on the back. The top, I want to say quarter to a third of it, is like, devoted to this... Again, what looks to be credit card sized, if not credit card shaped, rectangle.
And like shiny, like a credit card.
That's shiny. And then the top half of this little credit card thing has the Poco logo on the top right. And next to that there's like a main camera thing. And then below it, there's
There's a whole load of space as well. The weird thing is it just stretches across the whole
Understand
width
this.
Of the phone, doesn't
it? Do you need to advertise the fact you have things. Do you have to advertise you have a Poco phone? Like, you really need a big brand name.
Oh, did you notice? Oh, yes. It's a Poco.
Yes. In case you didn't know, it's a Poco. But also, to the left of the Poco logo, all the way on the other side of the phone there is like a one big camera sensor on the top and then three little camera things at the bottom below it? And a flash.
This looks horrific. This looks awful.
It's weird. It's kind of strange.
And yet you were complaining about the Oppo.
I mean, I'll take the Oppo over this any day. Crime against design. Yeah.
This one I can pretend like my credit card got stuck to the back of my phone. I almost feel like, I don't know. They're all not great looking. But I guess they're trying to deviate from that norm, right? Of the top left camera bank thing now. So
the dome of good design. Yeah, they're trying to deviate from good design, apparently.
So.
No, I wouldn't say it was your design.
Moving away from these cameras and this phone's awful design, we've got a 6.67-inch Full HD Plus display with a 120Hz refresh rate, and I guess like Snapdragon 695 5G chip, which isn't the most high-end, obviously, but it's also surprisingly down the like line of Snapdragon options you could have gone with.
Guys, you're not convincing me that this Mobile World Congress was any good with these phones. What?
No, we said from the outset it wasn't really a phone show. But on that point, like the rumors suggest, although Poco hasn't like announced the price, like Dan discovered like it was somehow cached on Amazon France and they were listing it for around $400. So
yeah.
You're going to get that guy to Snapdragon for $400. You're not going to be getting the Snapdragon 8, are you?
For sure. It's like 350 euros on like Amazon France, like you said. And like, yeah, you're definitely not getting Snapdragon 8 Gen 1. You're, I guess, not even getting a 765-ish tier of things. But, you know, maybe the 695 will be good enough for that 108 megapixel camera. It's not going to be slow whatsoever. So that was another phone that came out of this show. I mean, Poco also sent, like, I think had another phone called an Ace phone, but it wasn't, like, as interesting, I believe. as the Poco X4 Pro 5G. One more, really quickly, one more company that did show off phones is TCL. We remember TCL as being former owners of the BlackBerry brand for a bit, and MWC used to be where we would see new BlackBerry phones, BlackBerry Android phones.
Wait, is that TCL's claim to fame?
I don't know. They're one of the biggest TV companies in the world now. Like, not they make a lot of TVs. They are super popular. Yeah. They're super big.
Unfortunately, Davindra, we're talking about phones.
Yeah. Yes,
exactly. This is not the TVWC.
This is not
recap.
The exciting show where we can talk about things.
The TVWC. Love it. What a great joke show.
I know. I didn't just steal your joke. The TCL, yes, TCL is better known for its TVs, but it also, I mean, at MWC was more interesting because it did, you know, own the BlackBerry brand for a while, and the BlackBerry Key 1 and Key 2 all came out, and that was one of the phones everybody was dying to see. And I know people who still stubbornly hold on to their BlackBerry Key 2s because they love it. Anyhow, TCL did have new phones to show off at MWC this year. It already unveiled the TCL 30 series at CES with two phones back then. And at MWC, it added five new phones to the lineup. I'm not going to get into all of them because... You know, they're just
save us, Sherlyn.
Whatever. No. Why do I need seven phones in one family of phones? I don't. Yeah. What are you trying to be? They're trying to be Samsung.
I mean, yeah.
but more interestingly, TCL is one of those companies that tends to like roll up with. They know they need to get your attention somehow, so they come up with these really interesting concept devices. And MWC 2022 was no different for them. They had a new concept called Ultra Flex. And this is a product that will fold both inwards and outwards. It's got a 360 degree hinge, and the screen is supposed to withstand being folded inwards on itself and outwards to face the world.
This is an awful idea. And also, we're looking at photos of the hinge. Disgusting. Like, what? You just have, like... It does not look good. It does not look seamless. Like, if you want to break a device, like, yeah, flipping it both ways, twisting in and twisting out is a perfect way to break anything.
Yeah, that's how you break things. That's how you snap credit cards. So,
or paper.
Yeah.
That's, like, most things. But I mean, look, we know how, like, difficult it's going to be, right? But TCL was like, no, we got a working prototype. Yeah, work at our hands-on. Like... No, the hands-on event, TCL showed us the prototype, and they were like, I promise you the screen was on earlier today. I was like, well, it's not on now. and they're fully aware of this. They
love it.
It folds. They sure folded it. Yeah.
I will tell you that, like, I did, you know, pick this up, fold it in and out, and was like, I was so scared for this thing. I honestly... At some point, when the hinge makes that noise that, like, it, you know, things that are about to break make, like, you know, my bones.
why would you want... So what was TCL's, like, perspective on why you'd want a phone to fold outwards and inwards?
I know you read my article about this because you're asking this question. Like, what's the whole point of having a device that folds both in and out? And TCL's answer was that this combines the benefits of, you know, both the foldables like the Z Fold style, as well as those that fold outwards like the Mate. So the benefit of having the Z Fold style foldable is that you can like open it up like a book and then get a bigger screen immediately and you can have like a seamless experience. But the benefit of the fold out method, and I guess the fold in method is also that like you get a more protective
idle state. You at least hide the screens in that way.
Right, you can protect it, yeah. Whereas the fold out version, the bonus of that is that you can do things like show your outside half screen to someone while you're doing a presentation from the other side.
I guess you can get a full sized screen on the Solo profile. I guess you can get at least
exactly like a full
more standard
screen,
flagship full size screen.
Exactly, a full screen experience when you have it folded as well.
My favorite question at product briefings is why. You know, just why. Why does this exist?
No, I definitely yelled that at them. I was like, what's the reason? And this was their answer. I get it, I guess, but no, it's almost feels like it's too tricky. Like, to be clear, this is just like a prototype. I think I think it's fun that TCL is challenging themselves.
This is a prototype of what we won't do.
Exactly.
Is that how TCL very,
stay away very, from it.
Yeah. Very few of TCL's like recent prototypes have actually come to market. Just FYI. Oh, like basically
I am
none.
Shocked.
Have you guys seen the show I Think You Should Leave? Because this phone is the very first sketch. Like, it is the very first sketch is Tim Robinson. You ever have that awkward experience, guys, where you're trying to open the door and oh no, it's not a pull door, it's a push door, right? Okay, awkward. The first sequence is no, I'm not being awkward. This door will also pull. I will tear this door off the hinges so it pulls.
Oh my God.
And I will avoid this awkward experience. They basically made that as a phone.
I will will it to happen.
I will will it. Yeah. And go watch that sketch right now. It sounds like TCL just made that sketch into a phone. I swear.
Yes.
I swear it pulls out. I swear maybe. It folds out too. Yeah. And in.
We,
amazing.
Well, they swore the screen worked. We also saw the fold and roll concept that the company announced last April. This is a different prototype. It both folds and unfurls like a scroll. So there's a motor, and at the press of a button on the phone, you can have like the thing will go and then like the screen comes out. Okay, it doesn't make those exact noises, but that's kind of how it feels to me. The idea is that you have a foldable, but then when you want the extra screen space for a movie or, I don't know, books, you press that button and wait for 5 minutes.
It should have the sound effect of like one of those torture machines, you know, the ones that just like pull your limbs. Like, I want the phone to, don't.
Oh, like a Matt startup sound when he joined this call this morning. Yeah.
That's about it. Not to repeat the point I've been making several times, but you know what I thought? I was like, I swear I've seen this before. And because Oppo's X concept phone was a rollable phone that does exactly what Sherlin just described. And that was announced last year. Almost 2 years ago. Well, a year and a half, November 2020. So
about
a lot of the same ideas doing the rounds at the moment.
They're all playing with the idea, but I guess, you know, that's the fun thing about shows is companies want to catch your eye, so they do these things. But you know, the rest of TCL's lineup, in addition to those five phones, includes two tablets, one of which is the Next Paper Max 10. This is TCL's e-paper kind of tablet, and basically the Max 10 is a larger version of last year's 8.8-inch model. It's not like Huawei's. It's like full color. I don't believe it takes stylus input, but it can do like videos of up to like 30 FPS. So that was pretty interesting. I was finally able to see this in person myself. It just looks like a muted LCD. I haven't tested it like in low light yet or like in different lighting conditions to see if it looks any better than an LCD. But here we go. I mean,
it wouldn't.
Exactly. So it's supposed to be reflective. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm more intrigued by the Huawei one. But there were also, like we said, this was an LWC, a laptop show. You know who rolls to MWC with laptops apparently now? Samsung showed up with new Galaxy Book laptops at MWC this year. And again, I saw these in person at Samsung's hands-on event in New York. And I don't know about you. I think, Dev, you should give the Galaxy Book laptops like at least a look, because these are gorgeous machines.
They're nice. I remember, I think it was like 2010, like when Samsung was trying really hard to like copy the MacBook Air style, and they had some of those back then. I was like, okay, if I wanted like a really sleek PC, that would be one of them. I just kind of lost a lot of faith in it, because I'm just looking at this right now. It looks really sleek, but I don't like the bezel under the screen. You know,
it seems like there's
a lot of wasted space here. So I feel like Samsung is getting there, but then I'm seeing stuff coming from like Dell and HP and Asus, and I'm like, they are just playing in a whole other league when it comes to like screen bezel and sleekness, you know.
That's definitely one thing I pointed out when I was there, and I think I pointed out in my article too, is that this is still like a 16:9 screen, whereas and that leaves it like thumb tall.
You've got
bezel
space
at the bottom.
They've got space right there for a 16:10 screen.
I swear to you, they just have 16:9 screen cutouts still. Like they still haven't just added that to their manufacturing what are you doing? Like line. Which, and also these are AMOLED screens. So it's like, maybe they just want to wait till they, right. This is nice, but they want to also wait till they're like done with their stock or something. Sure. I don't really
They
know.
Make those screens though. Samsung makes those screens. Exactly. So it's like, it's all up difficult. To you guys. Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing about this line is that, like, okay, they seem pretty incrementally upgraded from last year's Galaxy Book Pro 360. This is the Book 2 Pro, Pro 360, and 360, so there's three. The Pro itself is a clamshell, whereas the 360 is, like, you know, convertible. Both very, very light. I thought
so
they
it
were...
folds in and out.
It does. Actually, yeah, it does.
I mean, a convertible laptop does fold in and out because that's functional on a laptop.
Yes, exactly.
I think we can just call that innovation.
Innovation.
Wow.
Baby.
So sexy. Done. The Pro 360 also folds in and out. But you know what's sexier about it? That burgundy color. The Samsung made a burgundy version of this laptop, and it's the same burgundy as you find on the S22 line of phones. So I thought it was hot. I mean, I'm a sucker for like interesting colors on laptops. So this is nice, and it supports the S Pen. The Pro 360 comes with an S Pen. Like I said, this is like a pretty straightforward generational upgrade from years past. The main thing that's improved is the cameras. And Intel's 12th generation core processors. So there you go. I mean, there's some software bonuses there too, but we know, haven't really tried those out. But that's one laptop we saw, one series or one family of laptops we saw at MWC. I'm going to power through the next one. Lenovo. But Lenovo's whole thing is they go to a show armed with armed to the teeth with
armed
laptops.
With arm?
Artillery.
They're armed with arm, apparently.
This year, they were armed with arm. There you go, Devendra. Yeah. Look at that. This year, Lenovo at MWC showed off the first ThinkPad powered by a Snapdragon chip. And in fact, this is the first machine we've even seen, the first commercial device we've seen with the Snapdragon 8cx Gen 3. This is the latest of Qualcomm's made for PC Snapdragon processors. And yeah, it's nice to see a ThinkPad get a Qualcomm chip, I guess. I mean, I think that lends it some credibility. It lends Qualcomm's chips some credibility because ThinkPads generally are very like serious laptops. I like this one. It was very thin and light and still has that ThinkPad design, still has a comfy ThinkPad keyboard with that little nub, the red pointing stick in the middle. It still remains to be seen whether Windows 11 on ARM is any better than before. But, you know, that's an interesting product.
I mean, the pitch here is also that, like, they aren't they, like, pitching a crazy
28 hours of runtime on a charge. Pretty insane. But, again, that's pretty in line with Snapdragon chip-powered machines so far, right? We've seen them increase over the years from 20 hours in the first generation to 22, 25, and now we're hitting 28 on the 8cx Gen 3. Something
I mean,
definitely
I guess, I guess I, maybe because I wasn't quite as deep into laptops as you two, but I just think the idea that a Snapdragon chip in a ThinkPad is kind of more notable or at least worth paying more attention to than the Snapdragon devices we've seen in the past, PC-wise.
No, Matt, you're right, though. Like, previous Snapdragon PCs have either been, like, HP has, like, made them only detachable laptop-type things, right? Or we've got Asus's Nova Go, and then they never did anything else with it. We had, I don't know if... We had a lot of, like, enterprise-level machines, but yeah, Snapdragon chips for PCs have been reserved for thin and light and very much tablet-first form factors, I believe.
Yeah, totally.
Right? Like, the Surface X, the Surface... right? Remember that thing?
That's the thing. So many of these devices just like sunk without a trace. Like I've almost definitely written something about most of them or put them in a newsletter or had to talk about them. But man, they have just a short-term memory in and out because they've never quite landed, have they? They've never quite stuck the landing.
Don't really
Do you
make
think
a
this
mark.
One offers anything different to help it?
Like you said, and like I also said, I guess we're just both saying the same thing. We just think Pad carries a certain... level degree of credibility with it, and though previous ThinkPads that Lenovo has made have had some like we're not sure like longevity issues, we're not sure if they're necessarily the best made in nowadays, but these are machines that a lot of business people take with them on the go, right? They're hardy, they're very light, they're comfortable to type on, they just perform well. So we had to see. I think
They look businessy as well. I think a lot of the thinner lights look a little bit too lifestyle, let's say.
Yeah.
yeah. This looks like, you know, you have a serious job and you're seriously working right now. It kind of projects that kind of image, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you look like you work in like a finance or like old school corporate jobs, whereas like nowadays...
I have a large Roth IRA.
Right. Or, yeah, whereas like other mainstream thin and lights, they look like you're like working at a startup. Like, my money comes from tech.
Yeah.
Like, or, I'm
I'm a photo editor that works with influencers. Yeah.
Oh, I'm making a TikTok on my mainstream ultra portable right now. In addition to the ThinkPad X13S, which is a Snapdragon powered machine, Lenovo had like 20 other devices. Man, I kid you not. And at least 18 of those were laptops. This is where it's LWC. So there was a ThinkPad Extreme Gen 5. And this is ThinkPad Extreme, the series, has been like the most high-end, but also like very rugged kind of ThinkPad device. And this is the fifth generation model that was unveiled at MWC. We didn't take too much of an in-depth hands-on with it, but it's definitely like one of the more interesting laptops at the show. In addition to the ThinkPad X1 Extreme 5th Gen, we had ThinkPad T Series, ThinkBooks. We had IdeaPad Gaming. We had IdeaPad Flexes.
IdeaPad, yeah.
Oh, Lord, we had Windows Detachable Tablets. We had Chromebooks. Let's not forget. And then a new, like, travel monitor. So Lenovo really just was like, okay, well, if no one's going to announce anything at MWC, here we are.
We got a little bit of everything, yeah.
We sure do. So yeah, there you go. I mean, we did cover.
I feel like the Snapdragon is the most notable of the Snapdragon.
Of course,
of their slate, definitely the most intriguing.
And speaking,
that's an awful lot of devices.
Speaking of Snapdragon, MWC also used to be a show where companies like Qualcomm, Intel, maybe even AMD. I'm not too sure about AMD, but they would have like at least big presence or booths there to show off 5G, because why not 5G? So Qualcomm did announce a new X50, a new 5G modem. It's the X70, I believe. And it's supposed to have like an AI processor on it to help, you know, pick better signals or improve signal strength, that
sort
of thing.
Don't they all? I feel like everything has...
Kind of,
right? We're all using AI to be better.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Trust me.
It's like at some point everything is artificially intelligent. Uh-huh. So there was that. And like I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned this yet on this show, I mentioned somewhere else, but the FCC chairperson Jessica Rosenworcel was also there, and they announced that at an upcoming auction in July, the US will auction off more mid-band spectrum for 5G in the 2.5 gigahertz range. So you know, still kind of a 5G show. Let's not forget. People still want to talk about this. Hey, also, they talked about NFTs and the metaverse.
No.
I know.
No,
FC
thanks.
Barcelona. FC Barcelona was like, hey, NFTs and metaverse. Cool
hey,
things.
Hey. We'll give you some free tickets to
cool
some
beans.
Matches if you write about our NFTs and our metaverse for football.
And then finally, I just want to shout out that OnePlus, while it didn't actually launch a new phone, did say that the OnePlus 10 Pro is coming out to the US, India, and some other markets in March, which is this month. And also said that like the next OnePlus phone supposedly can reach a full charge in 15 minutes. Holy
That's
crap.
Bad. You
That's
guys, we're playing with the electricity, like very high wattages at this point. There's a reason why electric car chargers require liquid cooling to get those things charged. So it's like I wonder what these companies are doing, because we are certainly going to be facing some trade-offs in terms of safety with these things. So we'll
see.
Yeah,
this is like 150 watt super VOOC charging that's from Oppo and
to this
in case
little
you didn't,
phone yeah. to the little phone
it's I don't really know how I feel about it. I also know the Galaxy Note 7's exploded, so
yeah,
you know, we'll see.
The most ridiculous thing I've seen, especially when it comes to phones and charging, is wireless charging, which is still incredibly inefficient in all ways, and you're literally wasting energy to more slowly charge your phone. But a lot of the most recent docks for wireless charging, and I'm thinking of ones from OnePlus, Oppo, even Google's Pixel charging cradle for the Pixel 6, you know, I'm not sure if any of you have used them or seen them, but when you plug them in and put your phone to charge, a fan kicks in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They have to. Yeah.
Okay, so I don't
but
use...
But that is so terrible.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is just...
Yep.
I use a different wireless
so
pad.
Cowboy, rickety nonsense to stop it bursting into flames. I was kind of embarrassed. I was like, oh, this is going to be so cool. It's going to charge my phone wirelessly, but fast. And then it just went... I'm like, oh, God.
That's why there's so many noises in your house, yeah. Matt. Okay.
Everything's wireless.
Sadly, everything generates heat. So
Matt's wireless home.
I'm glad they put the fans in there because it could be worse.
Yeah. Now I'm nervous about mine.
I don't know, but no.
That doesn't have a fan.
Just plug
mine's
in.
A little dull.
Just plug it in, people.
It's plugged in. It's plugged in the whole time, and I just drop my iPhone or whatever phone's on it all the time. So we'll see.
No, I mean plug your phone in.
Oh yeah, I mean I do that too.
Oh yeah, you could do that. You could do that.
No, I have too many phones is the thing. Like the wireless one's a standby charger. Anyway, so that was OnePlus and Oppo, but there were also some companies really quickly we want to shout out that we felt their absence. Sony, for example, said they weren't going to do anything for the show and actually didn't do anything for the show, which I was like, okay, you didn't surprise us.
Yeah, it actually didn't in the end, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for not making my life difficult. And then Google certainly was talking up MWC on social media. They were like, oh, Android is at MWC. And then like was just crickets the whole time. So I was like, all right, you're just...
Well, you know, they don't even have to attend fully.
They're doing it remotely.
All phones announced at MWC are Android,
yeah,
aren't they?
So it's remote kudos.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, yeah.
Exactly. So just, yeah, plenty of other absences.
Also, LG, rest in peace.
Oh, yeah.
LG, rest in peace.
They never got back to me. I kept asking them. I was like, are you doing anything at MWC? No, crickets again. So yeah, big absences. I don't know about the future of MWC as a show. I don't know if there's, you know, all that interest anymore. I really do hope to get back to Barcelona. And it used to be such a fun, vibrant show. And now it's just, I worry a little bit about it, Matt. Do you feel like they're coming back next year?
It's contingent on the companies. It's also contingent on the companies having interesting things to show. I also think that across media, like the coverage of a show that isn't attended by a lot of media is always going to be a little bit more dour.
True.
And a little bit more, I don't know, stilted and kind of flat. Because I feel like a lot of the best stories I write at these shows are when I'm on the floor and I find something bizarre, or I get to test out a feature on a device that, you know, I get to test because I can try it out for myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, if a lot of these shows are remote streams or, you know, Zoom briefings and the rest of it, there's a kind of passion disconnect.
Yeah. The energy is missing.
It's much more harder. Yeah. And it's harder to think creatively about what is the meaning of MWC 2022, that kind of thing. Like, what did we really get from this? And like we're saying, we've kind of touched on a lot of the trends here, but they're not exactly thrilling trends, are they? Well, there was a lot of laptops and, you know, there's less mobile players these days, and there's these Chinese companies, but they're really hard to tell apart, and they're often a little bit underwhelming. It's a bit mild, isn't it?
It's very much the, I don't know, the Spanish show, right? Like, you just want to have a siesta. Like, you hear some news, I just want to take a nap.
Just want to have a siesta.
I just want to lay down.
This is true.
Yeah. I mean, look, I do some of my best writing when I'm jet lagged and it's 12 a.m. and I still haven't gotten to sleep because I'm writing seven hands-on.
Which is a chilling indictment of how your standard writing is, to be honest.
Anyhow, we will for all of this coverage, for all the details of everything we've talked about, you can always go to Engadget.com to check out our articles. We were able to cover the show remotely, I think, pretty comprehensively. So hopefully we get to do it again next year.
Let's move on to some other news because I want to get away from Mobile World Congress so quickly. Apple announced that they're hosting their next hardware event on March 8th, which is very soon. I'm sure you're very excited about that, Sherlyn, right?
I guess my favorite thing about this was that we all kind of the rumor industry wide was that March 8th was the date, right? And so typical Apple fashion, everyone was expecting invites to come out on March 1st, a full week before, at about 12 p.m. or 1 p.m. Eastern. And March 1st came at 12 p.m. A bunch of invites started popping up on Twitter. And they were fake as shit. They were like, oh, it was like, at first when it was dropped in our Slack, because I'm like at the ready. I'm like ready to go the second the real invite drops in my inbox. But then like we started seeing these on Twitter and people were pinging me going like, hey, you know, this is up. I was like, okay, sure. I'll look at my inbox and like just nothing came from Apple. I was like, that's not like Apple. So finally it turns out they were faked. And some people were smart enough to know. Thankfully, I don't think any legitimate organizations actually picked those up as the actual invites. The question is, though, from me to you, the audience, and Matt and Dev, the invites themselves had pretty much the correct info, right? Like, other than the wrong catchphrase, they had the right timing, they had the right date, and the right URL, I guess, to view the stream. So, I don't know. What's like, can you call that fake news?
I don't know.
It's a very tricky question.
Maybe it was an early thing. Maybe it was a leaker, like just trying to refashion the news. I'm more interested in the catchphrase here, which is peak performance.
Yes.
P-E-E-K.
Yes.
I can't believe they made such a typo.
I wonder what that means.
Look at this image of an Apple logo of multiple layers. Like, I do wonder, like, if we will see something, maybe something in where we're expecting new iPhone SE and maybe an iPad Air, right? Like those are definitely
the devices that are most due for updates, right? Like the iPhone SE last one was like in 2020. New iPad Air is sort of something that people have been on the lookout for, and then potentially some Macs maybe. I wonder what P-E-E-K performance could be alluding to.
And it makes me think of like Face ID is a really powerful sensor, and one thing a lot of laptops are doing now are they're doing like security based on your looking and your gaze. So if you had an iPad next to you, right, and it was on standby or something, if you turn to it and could see your notifications, that could be kind of cool, like automatically. But yeah.
That's not bad. My suspicion, which is much more boring, is the idea that we could just get a peek at the M2 chips for Macs.
Maybe.
Could be.
In that they revealed M1 without revealing hardware. When the first kind of Apple Silicon appeared, it was very much like, this is what we're working on, but we're not telling you.
We'll probably get both, to be honest. Like, they will have to, basically, because we've seen the new Intel chips, we've seen the new AMD chips, and they look killer. Like, the performance is really good. I just reviewed the Asus G14, and yeah, it's fast. So I think Apple has to be like, hey, guys, just sit tight. Sit tight. What we got this year is even better.
Oh, yeah. I've got another hot take. Mm-hmm. I've got another hot take on it. You have to peek at the cable that comes with your new iPhone because, plot twist, it's USB-C.
I hope so. Oh, my gosh. That would be so fun. I do think, though, I was leaning towards Apple Silicon being the peak performance illusion.
Yeah,
I'm starting to think probably also iPhone SE 5G.
I mean, sure, it has to be. It has to be at this point.
It has to be. Yeah.
But like, if that's all it is, you know what I mean? Like, if it's not Apple Silicon and just like the 5G thing, like when they did high speed one time, they're like high speed. That was all about 5G, which was more significant back then. But this time around, it's like if that's all they do for performance, not interesting.
Yeah. I want to throw in one quick thing here, which there was a rumor going around based on a Bloomberg report that Apple's working on a 20-inch folding iPad. We didn't report that story because the date was like till 2026, but we've talked so much about folding things. We've talked about phones that bend this way and that way.
And that way.
But a 20-inch iPad that kind of folds closed or could be used like a laptop sounds reminiscent of the Asus, folding tablet we just saw, the 17-incher. So, hey, we're aware of that news. I would not be surprised if Apple's working on that because that seems like where tablets are going. So I'm excited about that. Sherlyn, you also had like a women's health study you want to mention?
Yes. Apple also released this week some more results from its ongoing women's health study. This time around, the results focused on PCOS or polycystic ovarian or ovary syndrome. And I mean, not typically the sort of news that Engadget covers like directly like this because it's you know, health study results aren't really in our wheelhouse. But the thing is that, like, this is an Apple Health study teamed up with Harvard, and participants had opted in through the Apple Research app on the phones, on their iPhones. And, you know, the data is gleaned through women, like, filling out questionnaires and surveys on their cycles or their medical histories. And so some of the findings, you know, are about the regularity of your cycles and how that relates to, you know, PCOS diagnoses. They found that, like, people who were diagnosed with PCOS tended to have more irregular periods, and then some of the other associated health conditions with PCOS. So if you want to, you know, I think it can be helpful aids for people who don't know that they might have PCOS to see something like this, and to realize that what they might be experiencing could be symptoms of PCOS, and therefore have a conversation with their doctors. I think that's, like, important for people to know. But B, it's another thing is that, like, there's not a lot of studies in the world that just focus on this topic. There's not a lot of studies looking at menstrual health or women's health, reproductive health. So this is nice to see. And if you want more details, you can A, check out our article in Gadget, or go to Apple's website on this.
Very cool. So to wrap, the Apple event is March 8th, 1 p.m. Yes. Eastern, as usual for them. What can people look forward to? For a post show? What are you doing?
A post show, indeed. We don't know. We will be on the Engadget YouTube channel as soon as Apple is over. So just come right over here once you're done watching the Apple one. Just have it open in a tab.
Make it sound like a circus.
Yeah, come on over. We have popcorn. We have delicious treats, you know, for ourselves. You can watch us eat. So there you go. Come March 8th at about, I want to say 2 p.m. Eastern, but cannot be really sure. Don't know when Apple's going to end yet. So there we go. That'll be fun.
That'd be fun. And you also, you want to call out, because I know you're doing a lot of accessibility reporting, Shrilin, like, you want to call out a new announcement around that?
Yes. So really quickly too, I received a heads up from the American Council of the Blind this week before they published this letter that altogether, about 181 disability organizations got together and signed a letter calling on the Department of Justice to finalize rulemaking for online accessibility. And it's a little confusing because it's like, why do you want people to finalize rulemaking, in quotes, right? But actually what is going on is that since prior to the pandemic, since almost as early as 2010 or so, legislators have been just back and forth trying to make sure that websites on the internet are compliant with ADA guidelines. And this is under, I believe, there's an act, the Online Accessibility Act. Let me just double check the name. It's been like days since I wrote this. But anyway, the Online Accessibility Act was introduced initially in October 2020, led by U.S. Representative Ted Budd. And then it just didn't get anywhere. And it was reintroduced again last year. But again, there's just like no movement, no traction. Nothing's been done just to like move forward and pass this as law. And so the letter urges the DOJ to be like, hey, can you just... just make it a rule already, because right now only about 3% of the internet is mostly compliant with ADA guidelines. About 97% of websites that WebAIM, Web Accessibility in Mind, they surveyed about 1 million pages, and about 97% of them had issues. They had failures against a checklist of accessibility guidelines. These issues are things like using low contrast text, missing form input labels, missing alt text, empty buttons. So basically, if you're a person with a disability, using the web can be a frustratingly inconsistent experience for you. And without these rules in place, it's very hard for people to like enforce a lot of these things. So I think it's important that we pay attention to this. Exactly. Another thing that really quickly just happened was Forza Horizon 5 also announced they're getting ASL and BSL built in, Woo! Interpreters built in for in-game content.
Woo-hoo! That's pretty great. And I do have to say, like, I think making these things into law could shift a lot of companies. Like, hey, even right now, I know we want to add more alt text to our images, like, as a standard thing at Engadget. But our gallery tool, for some reason, this is going like deep, our gallery tool for doing that has this weird bug where it's like it takes 30 seconds to like yes. type in a sentence because there's a huge yes. delay. So it's like, if these things were law, if we like paid more attention to it, like maybe then companies would have to invest in tools that would also make it easier to make things accessible. So that is kind of the trick down there.
Or at least prioritize them yeah. because the threat of being, you know, of the legal consequences would be exactly. big enough to make them prioritize it.
Yes. Exactly.
Sorry, this is just about the U.S. mostly, mm-hmm. Matt, but I know based in the U.K.
I mean, it trickles out.
Forza's getting British Sign Language. Don't worry. Yeah. It's all good.
And everybody will benefit if U.S. websites were forced to be better, too. So there is that.
We went through a similar thing, exactly the same argument when it came to GDPR yep, stuff. Exactly. Like, just the fact of it existing as a law.
Yes.
Which makes everything kind of shuffle in place because no one wants to be on the wrong side of
exactly.
it.
And then people in the Perfect. U.S. started, they had to react to it, but also prepared for the U.S. doing something similar. So, you know, that stuff is happening. Real quick, Trillin, you want to mention a new interaction language that Google's working on, which I think is cool. Just like
really casually.
Cool things. Chill. Like, you can glance at your yeah. screen. What's up?
Google wants to help or define a nonverbal interaction language for its devices. And it's more or less codified this. It's still calling it the, quote, new interaction language, unquote. This is coming out of the Google ATAP, or Advanced Technology and Projects Division, where they're experimenting with things. One of the things
I love
they,
that group.
They were,
everything they work on they tends so to fun. Be really cool. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, they one of the things they're responsible for is the Soli radar sensor. And so this language is actually based on like radar signals. It's using Soli to detect when a person is turning towards a device, glancing at a device, approaching a device, or just passing by it, and then uses those cues to like, you know, provide new ways to interact with the device. So if you're just passing by something, it will stay out of your way. If you glance at something, it'll show a little like notification card if you want. And then if you're approaching, it can actually make content get bigger and bigger as you get closer, or actually bigger as you get further away. My bad.
So that kind of relates to the peak performance thing we were talking about with Apple too. Like PC makers right now are doing a lot of cool things when it comes to like security and are you looking at your camera? Are you turned away? Like what content will appear on your screen? So we're going to see a lot more of that now because we have this tech and like security is a bigger deal. And also it's helpful for accessibility too, right? So I'm glad Google's working on this. Yeah. Just moving on to some other news happening. You've probably heard everything happening around the tech industry and how they're responding to Russia too. This all really started off like we talked last week as we were recording, Russia's invasion of Ukraine began. And since then, the U.S. has announced sanctions against Russia that'll limit the access to technology companies. So a lot of things you're seeing from Facebook and other people aren't just Facebook being very proactive here. They're responding to limitations set in place by the U.S. government. So, you know, the Facebook said that they're going to be demoting Russian state media and also blocking Russian state media from running ads. And we're seeing a lot of that happening throughout. Companies are saying they're going to not sell products. I believe Apple has said that too in Russia anymore. So we're really waiting to see like what all of this will lead to. Because it is one of those things, right? So my one question is like, how will this affect Russian consumers who are, you know, not part of the whole, they're not the ones making war. I hope it's not going to be too harsh for them, but we're also seeing like what's happening here is economic sanctions are also tanking the Russian economy. So this stuff is going to have like far reaching implications, more than we can discuss here, but I'd love to devote a future episode to like to diving into that and the idea of justice and everything around it. But yeah, that is happening. And also President Biden's State of the Union also happened. And happened this week. And one thing he mentioned is a move towards pushing against ad targeting towards kids, which I did not expect to see. But yeah, good thing, because it's the ad industry has been disgusting for a while. That is why that is the thing that has powered Google and certainly Facebook and Instagram and basically the entire modern web. Ad targeting is kind of the name of the game. We are seeing more and more companies push back from it, like Apple's options to, you know, tell apps and things not to track you and not to data collect on you. It is nice to see the president at least like highlighting these types of things. And another thing, I think bit of fun news. smart mosquito repellent system.
Oh my goodness.
From Thermacell.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I was so intrigued by this because I hate bugs. B, I've seen so many types of devices that purport to do this that are like, oh, plug me into a wall and I'll scare away mice or I'll scare away bugs. And few of them actually ever work. So I was very intrigued by whether this would. I mean, you seemed interested in it too, right?
As somebody who lives in goddamn in Georgia, I don't know if you've been down here during the summer, Sherlyn, but all we have are bugs.
The air is 90% mosquitoes.
It's all humidity. It's all bugs. It's all mosquitoes. Honestly, it's not mosquitoes that really get me. It is chiggers. I don't know if you guys have heard of these. They're like little red like mite things, but you don't see them. But you walk through.
I think we call them bloodsuckers.
Yeah, they're probably like bloodsuckers. But you walk through like grass and you come out with like red welts all over your legs. It is not fun. And you don't.
I'm Googling them now.
They're not great.
I am not coming to
They're
visit
not
you.
Great. They're So you have to like basically. It's a requirement down here for everybody to like spread insecticide for you to like enjoy your yard during the summer. We haven't really done as much of that. I've done like light insecticide to avoid mosquitoes. Thermacell is a company that has been producing smart mosquito repellent devices for a while. And it's not using like freaking magic radio waves or something, right?
They AI targeting.
It's not doing it. I have a little thing. I charge it over USB-C. It has a little cartridge which slow burns this like it's like a slight mist. So
like a gas.
Like almost, but similar to like what people use citronella for, and citronella, by the way, doesn't actually work. I think there have been a lot of studies around that stuff, so it doesn't help. But the Thermacell stuff does. This looks like a large system to spread out bigger cartridges basically throughout your yard. You have to get installed. It has to be wired, so you can't just like stick them down there. But it looks like they're
They look pretty substantial. Yeah. They look.
Yeah. They're like, it's serious, and they have to
like
get power.
Something a utility would install. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So they have to get power, and that's the hard thing. But it looks like you don't have to pick them up at the end of the year. It looks like they say the cartridges, like all the devices need cartridges, and they can like keep your entire yard free of mosquitoes for like a year before you need to, you know, replace them. So if I had, and you can also say it's a smart device, so you could set it up. So
if you had $800 for a four pack,
or plus extra, because I've learned everything costs extra to install. You need more money to like pay the people to install it. If I had that money and I was like, okay, I just don't want to deal with mosquitoes.
So if you have a Thermacell already, Devendra, just double check. Yeah. Does the repellent just repels, right?
It just repels. It doesn't kill. So that's also nice.
Because I thought it'd be ironic if the name was Live and it's literally just slaughtering all
It pushes
insects.
Them to your neighbor's yards, which is great. It's great if you don't like your neighbors. So all the bugs go there.
Of course. They've got to go somewhere, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So, hey, I think this thing's really useful. It's very expensive, but I think for certain people, and honestly, as things heat up across the world and across America too, you're going to be seeing bugs everywhere. More bugs. So things like this will be really useful.
Mosquitoes carry disease too.
They do.
In Singapore,
it's really bad.
Dengue fever.
But I will link you to this, Sherlyn, and Thermacell's devices if you search like wire cutting and everything. Like it's a little like pocket thing. Take it with you, hit a button, and it like gives you a bubble zone of mosquito freeness. So you could bring it to the park and like have a decent day in the park. And that sort of thing I really like. I'm intrigued by this. I believe Billy Steele has already gotten a review unit over in Gadget, so we'll be looking out for his coverage soon.
So while Billy is reviewing that, what are you doing, Devendra?
I am currently tearing apart. What do I do? I don't know. I'm currently tearing apart Intel's Nook 12 Extreme Kit. I was actually trying to review it earlier this year or earlier this week. And then I opened it up and it turns out they just sent me a kit. Like they just sent me the bare bones kit. And what that means is there's no RAM, no SSD, no video card or anything, which is that's how you buy it. So I'm getting like the actual experience. But typically when we review these things, Intel's just like, hey, guy, we're just going to put it all in there. Just
a full spec.
Yeah, just benchmark it.
Full specs NUC.
So I did not get the full spec NUC. So it's just taking me a little longer and like bloody thumbs to like get into it. But I think I have it up and running now. So looking forward to like writing that up for probably Monday. The Asus Zephyrus G14 review went up. I'll be, working on a bunch of stuff basically, and I'll be planning to take paternity leave in April, so trying to get everything done before all that.
All the things. Matt, what are you working on?
Do all the PCs. What am I working on? So, not to be too disgusting, but I'm working on a guide on how to clean your wireless earbuds, which is, you know, obviously the sexiest story.
So important
in this day and age. So that's just wrapped up. That's in edits, and that will be running a little bit later this year. I literally have no idea when, so that's what I can't really say. Apart from that, I've got a bunch of things in the hopper, actually. I've been recently inundated with, well, I've requested them, a bunch of fitness tech gadgets, both things for fitness and working out and things for fitness recovery. Me and Sherlyn have a lot of chats, actually, about the massage therapy guns and the kind of
peripherals you can
get
love
from them, the different kind of percussive. I've got a percussive therapy ball, which is
amazing. One of those. So, my chiropractor. Anyway.
Yeah, it's really good. But I've also got Therabody, which is a company that owns Theragun. They also do these kind of
pneumatic
inflatable pressure pants that you like I don't know, blow up trousers that you put on and then they kind of compress.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of thing. And they like, you know, like the blood pressure monitor thing that inflates around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of like that. Yeah. So it helps your like circulation when you're when you're running marathons like I'm doing regularly. Yeah. So I've got a lot of other things that I don't want to reveal, you know, all everything.
I feel like we're working on the same things. Matt.
Typically.
Well, we need to talk about this because
how about you, Cher?
We have the same ideas. No, I mean, unfortunately, I don't have the time in the immediate future to do that sort of coverage because after all the MWC stuff has died down, I'm diving right into Apple preparation. I mean, whatever Apple announces next week, I will have to probably test at some point. And I have something in the works that, again, is also a secret, but it's so intriguing. I can't wait to tell you all about it. It will be, you'll see it next week for sure. So secrets, but fun secrets in addition to Apple. Elsewhere on Engadget, our team is also hard at work. We've got Sam Rutherford's review of the Galaxy Tab S8 Plus that went live this week. I think a lot of people were very hyped for this.
The only Android tablet worth buying, apparently, like the only premium one.
I know. Unfortunately, we don't have the Tab S8 Ultra, which is the new 14-inch Android tablet model. But this one is still nice. It's the big boy. And it's a premium Android tablet. Go read it if you were interested in it. Yeah. Also, Andrew Tarantola on our team has an article about what economic sanctions mean for Russia's space program, which I think is a timely piece and a closer look at all of these sanctions that are happening and how it affects a specific part of the tech space, I guess.
Gotcha, cool. Well, let's move on to our pop culture picks, which is the thing I most enjoy. I'm gonna put it to you first, Matt, actually, because you're the guest this week. So what are your pop culture picks for the week?
So I've just already read what you guys are about to do. So I'm very excited for you to reveal more on those. But at the moment, I've just kind of wrapped up half of the series of Laugh Out Loud Canada. Now, I know there's a US spinoff of Laugh Out Loud, and it's all based on Documental, which is a Japanese show. The notion is a bunch of comedians and funny people are trapped in a room and they have to make each other laugh. That is the crux of the matter. If you laugh, you get a yellow card. If you laugh again,
isn't that
you're
just
out.
Called a podcast? That is every podcast right now, apparently.
Not this podcast.
No, this we're not comedians.
One, yeah.
But every comedian podcast is like people just trying to one up each other on their shows. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's something because it's Canada and it's Canadian comedians, they're all very sweet and kind of fuzzy. There's some like proper, you know, big Canadian hitters. There's Tom Green, there's Mae Martin, who's kind of a very popular Canadian comic who's based in London, and a bunch of others, like half of them I haven't heard of, I'll be honest, but it's a very cool show that I'm enjoying at the moment.
Tom Green is still around? Tom Green is on a TV show? What?
Yeah. And I keep forgetting he's Canadian.
Yeah, he's Canadian.
He is on the show. Okay. And he's relatively sensible as well. It's on Amazon Prime, and you guys can watch it in the US as well. But Prime Video is doing this weird thing where they're still eking out an episode a week. And I don't know, I'm kind of over that these days. Like for that kind of fun comedy stuff, I want to watch the whole season and binge it and just kind of get the whole hit all at once. Alongside watching that and waiting for new episodes, I've also started Horizon Forbidden West. I know Jess and Devendra talked about this on the podcast last week, so check out that episode if you're interested. But it's wonderful. Playing on a PlayStation 5, 60 FPS. The facial expressions and the kind of animation of these people, they feel pretty darn human. Like, it's very
movie-like.
It's very impressive. It's very,
are you doing Elden Ring?
There's like nuance.
Are you doing Elden Ring yet, Matt?
I'm not. I don't really do the Dark Soulsies that much. I think, you know, this could be the one to get me on board. But it seems like a winter game. It seems like the kind of game you want when it's still really cold and you got nowhere else, or to be honest, a pandemic lockdown.
It would probably be a good winter game.
It's very challenging.
But I think just like when Breath of the Wild came out, that was when the first Horizon came out. I'm like, you're giving me two open world games, and like one I think is a lot more compelling and different and interesting, and then the other is like the big budget Sony game. So I played like an hour of Horizon. I'm looking forward to getting back to it, but right now it's like Elden Ring is like where I want to be. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's. I think the curse of these Horizon games is for the original and is true of this one, is that it does a lot of stuff you've seen in other games, and it does it well, but you're still left waiting. You want the kind of uniqueness. You want some kind of, like, a little bit more
something
originality.
Something more. There's, I think I also just...
Something more.
I hate controlling Aloy, and playing this game reminds me of, like, she's slow. Everything takes a while to move and jump and climb, but I'm looking forward to getting back into it. Let's move on to Sherlyn. What are your secret pop culture picks this week?
I'll start with the not secret one. When Matt said that you know you were tired of waiting every week for a new episode, something that I've been tired of waiting every week for a new episode, but I'm dying to watch every week, is Severance. I know that, I don't know if, Dev, you've mentioned it on the show specifically before.
I feel like
we've
talked about that it was coming, and I'm working on like getting some interviews around that, hopefully. But yeah, what do you think?
I mean, I've been intrigued by the premise ever since I heard about it. And the first two episodes that I've seen so far, gosh, they're so, wow. I love a show that drags me in, that like just pulls me in into the premise, into the world. Adam Scott does a great job here with like his character. The premise, I think, is no spoiler to say the premise is basically people who have decided to opt for a procedure that will separate their work memory from their personal life memories.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect when I went into it, I didn't expect some of the consequences that would mean for their selves at work.
Yeah, it's really like, it's very meaningful, right? Like if you don't have any memory of what happens in work, you're essentially two selves, right? And you have your outie self, as they call it, who is out in the real world, and your work self. And the work self just never leaves. You're just always there. And I'm sure like
you're constantly at the office.
Sherlyn and I are probably like of a similar overworking mind. How did that hit you? Like, because if you did that right now, Sherlyn, you basically would barely have an outie like time.
I would not. I would never opt for a procedure like this. I think work is a bit too significant a part of my life at the moment. I think my outie.
But I think that's the point. I think that's the thing.
At the moment. Yeah.
Matt, stop calling me out. I definitely thought it was, I didn't, and then when I did realize, I was like, oh, they don't get breaks. Like they truly, the work innies, they don't get breaks. And
well, they get like 15 minute, they get the poor, sad, if you've ever worked like a retail job, like you get 15 minutes to sit down and like contemplate your existence basically in between your shift and then come back. That's all they get. Yeah.
It's insane. And then the work that they do is very like nebulous. You don't really know what's going on here. There's a bit of a mystery to it. So I really, really enjoy the premise, the world building, and
it's
so
very
far, the
metaphysical.
Story telling is great.
Yeah.
It's very much. Matt, have you seen this? Sorry.
I think you'd love it.
No, I haven't at all. I haven't even gotten near
it.
No.
It's very Terry Gilliam, and it's also very like Spike Jones. Like it's I was trying to think of Spike Jones movies in my brain. It's right. It's very like fantastical in a way, but it's also like the Terry Gilliam world building and old looking.
Remember
machines.
That? Do you remember that Jonah Hill, Emma Stone, psychological?
Yeah, I was just about to start Maniac. Watching it. Yes, exactly. Maniac. It's on Netflix.
Which,
that was enjoyable.
That was fun. And it's like that show doesn't exist. I feel like this is on another level. It's all also entirely directed by Ben Stiller, which is it's kind of.
I was gonna say.
Movie. He's moving into directing. That. He did a TV series like last year or 2 years ago called Escape from Dannemora that people really like. That was like a prison escape thing. So this show's created by Dan Erickson. I'm working on getting an interview with him. I think it's really cool. Anything else you want to add about this, Sherlyn?
No, not this show, but because this one wasn't like a surprise to you anymore, I did want to pick one more show on Netflix that I've been so, so sucked into that just finished. I'm sure you've heard about this one, Devendra. It's called The Silent Sea. It's a Korean science fiction drama on Netflix. I think it premiered January this year. It stars Pei Duna and Gong Yoo, and freaking hell, are they both hot as shit.
Okay.
Gong Yoo is amazing. Gong Yoo is like the main character in Train to Busan. So I think many of you will find him familiar. He was also in Squid Game. He was the guy who slaps people in Squid Game.
The beautiful slappy man who instantly became a meme. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And he is also here in The Silent Sea, along with Pei Duna, whom I've loved. She was just... I mean, she's working with the Wachowski siblings. Yeah. She's in Sense8. Yeah. She's everywhere. She was in Kingdom, which I really love. So anyway, this is really... moments of this show seem to move too slowly for my liking, but then a lot of it is just such great action. The story, the premise is great. The world is amazing. It's all in Korean, but...
Have you seen We Are All Dead, by the way, or All of Us Are Dead?
Not yet. Which not is yet. The other All of Korean Us Are show. Dead.
That's been recommended to me a few
times. Everyone's been talking about that one too.
Up on my algo.
Yeah.
The
hype. I don't know. You did Squid Game when we were all hyping it up. I am looking forward to seeing that other one, All of Us Are Dead. That's a zombie show, also Korean. Lots of cool stuff. I just want to quickly say I have seen The Batman. And The Batman is
Are you the Batman?
I am the Batman. I am Justice. It is really good. It is really, really good. I'm trying to get like a special effects or something interview for it and Engadget. But yeah, this movie, it's directed by Matt Reeves. Hey, Matt Reeves, who most recently did the Planet of the Apes movies, which I think are goddamn masterpieces. Like the last two, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War for the Planet of the Apes. Fantastic films. He did Let Me In, Cloverfield. This guy never misses. So this is like a dark, gritty, operatic Batman. And I think even more, like more stylish than the Christopher Nolan movies, which I generally like. I love Batman Begins. I love The Dark Knight. Dark Knight Rises, not as much. But those always felt like, okay, let's do Batman in like urban, modern urban, like crime thriller. You know, let's do Batman as a Michael Mann movie. This one is doing Batman as basically like gothic, everything's dark, everything's wet, opera and operatic themes kind of are a big part of it. And I think aesthetically, it's cool as hell. Robert Pattinson makes a better Batman than freaking Ben Affleck. We're just going to forget about that whole thing. And Zoe Kravitz is great. So it is 3 hours long. I feel like it may be a bit too long for most people. But for me, who was just like, I was just vibing. Like, this movie's an entire vibe. And there's a point where, you know, you get a bit of, you get a glimpse of the, like, Batmobile chase in the trailer. But by the point that hits, like, it becomes like a full-on, like, Mad Max movie after a certain point, too. So it has so many things I love. Love everybody in it. I think it's great. Maybe it could have been tightened up a bit, but it is worth a watch for sure. And Paul Dano's Riddler is absolutely like psychotic. Like, he is just a scary, scary serial killer, basically. And scarier than like what the Joker was trying to be. So it is worth a watch. See it in IMAX if you can. And I hope we can cover it somehow here at Engadget. And that's it for our show today, folks. Thank you for joining us. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Matt Smith online at
that Matt Smith. That's Matt with one T on Twitter and on Instagram. It's too hard a thing, but I'm on there.
He's there. You'll find a Matt Smith, right? It's not too hard to find Matt Smith on Instagram. Sherlyn.
Yeah, it's a very exotic name.
Sherlyn, where can we find you?
Tell me your favorite snacks to watch Apple's event with on Twitter. I'm at Sherlyn Lowe.
Cool. And you can find me at Devendra and at the Filmcast podcast at thefilmcast.com. And we're going to have a Batman review up. And we just reviewed the latest Scream movie. Sherlyn, I feel like that is very much your jam. I don't know if you're into the Scream movies, but new Scream is real good. And that's it for us, folks. You can email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.